Australia has thrown another log on its smoldering trade dispute with China. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Trade links between Beijing and Canberra have been increasingly strained since Australia called for an independent investigation into the origins of the coronavirus pandemic last year. But Australia's latest move to cancel agreements tied to China's Belt and Road Initiative have been met with outrage this morning. A spokesperson for China's foreign ministry said the move recklessly interferes with and destroys cooperation between the two nations. The sweeping Belt and Road infrastructure project has funded trains, roads, and ports in many countries, but has left some with mounting debt. Australia says it backed away from the agreements to protect its national interest. And the BBC's Stephen McDonnell explains the decision came down to a clash between federal and state governments.
The state government of Victoria signed two kind of memoranda with China to be part of the Belt and Road scheme. It's not legally binding at all. It's just a vague promise. We'll buy more of your staff. We'll cooperate on technology. But the Australian government has said, well, no, that should be the responsibility of the national government. And so then they brought in new legislation which enabled the national government of Australia to override it. Given that it's just symbolic, why would China care about the tearing up of these memoranda? Well, it's because this is like one of Xi Jinping's pet projects. So the idea that someone would come along and force another government to tear up a deal on it, it's kind of been seen as a bit of a slap in the face to Xi Jinping and to China.
And China is Australia's biggest trading partner. So does ripping up these deals mean that it's no longer participating in the Belt and Road at all?
No, Victoria was the only one that had a sort of BRI-type deal. But because there's been a revelation of several high-profile cases of attempted influence, which have been tracked back to the Communist Party, this has led to a lot of mistrust. Add on top of that, it wouldn't have necessarily delivered any jobs. It wouldn't have necessarily meant buying any products from China. Now, the flip side of that is that the Victorian government would say, why not just sort of sign on to it with the hope that greater cooperation will lead to more jobs? But now they don't have any choice because the federal government has just legislated themselves the power to cancel these deals, and that's exactly what they've done.
The BBC's Stephen McDonnell for us in Beijing. Thanks so much for your time.
Good to talk to you.
Checking the numbers now, after a stock rally across Asia, European shares are nearing fresh records this morning. Shares of Swiss food giant Nestle are up more than 3%. That's after the company said strong demand for coffee, dairy, and pet products led to the strongest quarterly sales growth in a decade. To Myanmar now, where the United Nations is warning as many as 3 million more people may go hungry in the aftermath of a February military coup. The BBC's Jonathan Head has more on that story.
The statistics in the WFP's assessment report are stark. As much as 90% of all government activity has stopped in Myanmar since the coup. The health service barely functions and nearly all banks have closed, disrupting the flow of remittances from abroad, which are a lifeline for millions of Burmese families. Factories are closing, and the UN Human Rights Rapporteur believes a quarter of a million people have been displaced by the violent actions of the security forces.
That's the BBC's Jonathan Head reporting there. The chairman of the proposed European Super League has denied the project has collapsed. That's despite most of the founding clubs pulling out altogether. The league was proposed over the weekend as a way to bring the region's elite soccer teams together in an American-style structure. But it ignited a firestorm of criticism this week, the kind of which the league's chairman says he's never encountered before. Unlike clubs from England, Italy, and Spain, German teams were not involved in the formation of the Super League, and the BBC's Kevin Conley reports that's likely due to a rule guaranteeing members a controlling stake in the operations.
It is match day between Borussia Dortmund and the visitors from Union Berlin, and normally this stadium, home to the biggest, most passionate crowd in Europe, would be a boiling cauldron of noise, celebrating what they see as a victory over those plans for that European Super League. But listen to this. There's nobody here. Make no mistake, though, German football fans are in the mood to celebrate.
There is a strong belief, and it belongs to the values of the club, that it's a club for the people, and the people make up the club. They make it different.
Jürgen Kurs, football writer for the local newspaper Ruhr Nachrichten, says no Middle Eastern royal family or Russian oligarch will ever own this club or any German club like it.
They reject foreign investors, they reject the business being too commercial.
And here, from happier times, is that cauldron of sound. Dortmund Stadium includes a tribune of 25,000 standing fans paying just over €200 a year for their season tickets, a fraction of what it costs to sit in English stadiums. For less than €70, you can become a member of the club, giving you a vote and a voice in the decision-making. The rules give 50% plus one of the votes to supporters, and the Borussia Dortmund fan ambassador, Toby Westerfellhaus, says that makes German clubs a bulwark against money-making schemes like the European Super League.
My message to the football fans around the world is own your clubs and don't let money make the decisions.
No one in cities like Dortmund is kidding themselves that the idea of some kind of Super League has just gone away forever. And like football fans everywhere, they're critical of the current authorities, FIFA and UEFA. But there is a certain confidence here that ordinary fans have a say in the future of the game, even if that makes life difficult for foreign princes, billionaires and ambitious businessmen running clubs elsewhere in Europe.
That's the BBC's Kevin Conley reporting there on a model that just might pique the interest of England's fierce football fan base. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.